Get ready to sit back, relax, and open your mind. Welcome to Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. I'm Chris Jordan, your host, and today on the show, for the first time ever on Thinking Deeply, actually, to my recollection, this is the first time that we'll actually have a guest on Thinking Deeply. Typically, Thinking Deeply is the segment where I take a topic that we've talked about on Dudes and Beer and really delve deep into it, really start digging in. And as I went today and picked up our first of many deliveries, I'm sure, from our brand new sponsor, Hops and Grain Brewing here in Austin. Many, many props to you, Hops and Grain. As I went there to visit and pick up our couple cases of beer for the next couple weeks, I ran across this nice gentleman named Sanchit, who is from the Florida area and is quite literally displaced because of Irma God, as everybody is saying on the internet right now. He went to Houston, and because he was in Houston, and hey, Houston's been kind of stranded out, he came to Austin, and while we were there at Hops and Grain, just kind of got into a really deep discussion about a lot of things that we talk about on Dudes and Beer on the regular: data, information, things like that, protecting yourself in this digital world that we live in. And it blew my mind as we were talking, number one, not just what he does for a living, but his name itself means collecting knowledge. And as a data analyst, I found it interesting that his name actively meant collecting knowledge. So, Sanchit, welcome so much to the show. Welcome to the broadcast. And so let's get into a little bit, because we've been talking for the last few hours off air, and it literally he got cornered. He was at a bar here in town, his first stop in Austin, and welcome to Austin. You got wrangled into a podcast within your first few hours of landing in Austin. So, A, how does that feel to you? Where do you stand on that? Being brought into a broadcast your first couple hours just visiting the Austin area.
First of all, thank you for introducing me to like the people, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't even know who I'm talking to right now.
Well, I mean, you're talking to our audience. We aren't actively live on air right now. This is a pre-recorded episode. But, you're talking to a couple hundred, few hundred listeners a week. Come time that it hits our Breach TV platform, normally within a week, we've got close to 1,000 listens, stuff like that. So, we hit some pretty selective audiences out there.
That's pretty amazing, because I'm not used to talking to more than two people at the most in one time, So like,
yeah,
being introduced to so many people together makes me feel uncomfortable. And I'm completely honest about that. But it does not. It's also an opportunity for me being able to talk to so many people. So as much as it's a challenge, it's also an opportunity for me. So I'm excited.
And today,
and I feel,
thank you.
And I feel quite privileged today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the privilege for my little show here. Now, when we were talking earlier, we were getting into datum especially, and the difference between the two. And so many times here on the Dudes and Beer podcast, we talk about information. And I want you, because you really, really broke it down for me at the bar. As I grab a beverage over there out of the fridge, I would like you to kind of break it down as a data analyst. And we aren't talking media here, people, even though that's what caused the conversation. remember, media in and of itself, the news, everything is nothing but information, people. And you really do have to have an analytical mind to break this stuff down and to think about it in cold, hard terms, not in politicized terms, not in terms of left and right, but in terms of straight facts. So I want you to lay out what we were talking about earlier, the definition of data and datum, and what the difference between the two is and why it's so important to look at data and not datum in and of itself for a Sanchez. So go ahead and break that down as a data analyst.
Well, honestly, it's a very broad question for me. I don't even know.
Anybody. I mean, broad scope.
I understand what your question is, but it's a very difficult answer to really break it down. I mean, that's the life's purpose that you just asked me. That
yes, thank you.
It's as basic as it should be. It needs to be explained. And so I feel it's a great question to ask is what's data, what's data, what's information, and then what's knowledge and wisdom. And I think that it's stages of, they're really stages of life as the way I see the world of data as it is. Datum is something that we start with, and it comes from a space of space that's pure, space that's honest, almost like the perfect pure world that you can think of, where I mean it's a place of love.
Yeah,
is where datum is. And then as we grow, and it's like a baby. A baby is born into this world.
Yes.
He's happy all the time. He does not know what's going on around him, but you see him, he's smiling.
Yeah.
Right? And as baby grows up, he starts to get more data around him that starts to look like an information. He starts to understand the world, and then emotions go through him. It could be negative, it could be not so positive, you know, and it could be positive, and he goes through so many emotions. And then as he grows up, he starts to understand those emotions in a way that he is able to comprehend between what is right, what is wrong. He has an idea that, oh, I think it's right, or I think it's wrong. That's knowledge. That he has that understanding.
Well, exactly.
But he does not have the fact
and that's,
yet.
That's where we have to break down the point of, by that point, you have filters.
Right.
And you've had enough.
You have possibilities.
You've had enough datum,
right,
which you have to understand are singular points.
Mm-hmm.
Singular points. So if you look at the sky, let's say, after the sun sets,
right,
okay, the sun, as far as we know, is one datum point all day long. We have one frame of reference as to what time it is.
Right.
Just one.
Right.
And that's the position of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more. You get to nighttime, now you've got a whole celestial scope that you can look at and get a totally different frame of reference as a sailor as to what your actual navigable points are. Now you're looking at data, not just datum. When a sailor is sailing on the open sea back in the day, he had the sun to navigate by. That's it. He had one point of reference. Once the sun set, he could actually navigate, because at that point you have data. You have more than one point of reference in the sky to look at.
Well, that's a
great... And that provides you with the information,
mm-hmm,
that you need to get from point A to point B.
I think that's absolutely correct. And it's a great way to imagine...
Just dawned on me.
Yeah. I mean, now it all makes sense,
yeah,
right? Just with that one example of sailing, as you described. So...
And even as points of reference in life, I find it interesting that that is what you broke it down to in our conversation earlier, because as a new father, a child of just going on 4 months, I've literally seen this process of blank slate to now. And the data, whatever I'm putting into my child, is all the data that he's receiving. So that will eventually be the filter through which
he sees the world.
Right, and that might be just one datum of the universe.
Exactly.
And there's so much that he still needs to know.
And that's where the critical thinking comes in. That's where developing that in the next point of life with knowledge and wisdom comes in. Because from data and datum, you pull information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through the processing of that information through life that we come to knowledge and wisdom. So bring that around for everybody as far as the points of life and where you've come to in life with that.
Well, I think I've not reached the point of wisdom as of now. And I like to live in a world where I feel like wisdom is something that is unreachable in a way that it is sort of a place it's like a goal in your life that you go through knowledge, and the real knowledge is in the purpose of learning, and the real knowledge is in the purpose of trying to reach a point of wisdom. But wisdom itself is not, it's the journey that's more important than the destination.
Exactly.
So the purpose is to keep learning. The purpose is not to reach a point of wisdom and stop.
That's right.
Because if you reach wisdom, you might as well be dead.
Well, even if you reach the point of information, none of these are an end stop on the road. None of them.
Yeah.
None of the, and I had my spiritual director tell me that years and years ago that, like I told you before the show, the only stupid question is the one you didn't ask.
Exactly.
In the realm of a teacher in my life, you know, like that was my teaching as a teacher.
Yeah.
Whenever I taught was if you didn't ask the question, I can't give you an answer. Like I can't even give you somewhere to start if you don't give me a question.
Right.
So you have to be willing to ask the question, number one. Number two, you have to be willing to accept the answer, whether it goes along with your ideal, whether it doesn't. The answer is still datum.
Right.
It's still a point of data.
Still
information.
I honestly feel there is no answer.
Yeah.
Because there is always a question to an answer.
Yes.
You can never reach a point where you can be like understood.
Yeah. Well,
you have, even if you do understand, but over the time, you have to ask again.
Yeah. And
there could be a different answer.
Exactly. I don't know if you're familiar with the Douglas Adams work, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I've heard about it.
But that's one of the things that the society creates is this computer to answer all questions.
Okay.
And it spins like lifetimes calculating this answer, and when they come to get the answer is 42.
Mm-hmm.
The answer to the ultimate question of life, meaning, being, everything, that's what they gave it, the parameters for the question. The meaning of all life, the meaning of life as we know it, what is it? It's like 42. Well, why is it 42? I don't know. I would have to build a different computer to tell you that. You just asked me for the answer, not for the means to the answer. So I would have to build another system to answer that question. I was just built to answer this one question. And the answer to this one question is 42. The hows and whys, I don't know. So, and, you know, it is kind of that conundrum when it comes to wisdom, knowledge, things like that. You know, unfortunately, and I've tried to tell people for many years, you know, we're like, oh, you're incredibly smart. It's like, no, I know a lot of random shit.
Mm-hmm.
My brain picks it up and it does not get rid of it. That's how it works. Like, it takes a minimum of 5 years to age cheese. That's a fact that I picked up somewhere. I don't even know what kind of cheese it was that it took 5 years to age, but it took minimum of 5 years to do it.
But it's nothing but common sense.
It's there. It's a point of datum that I picked up. It has no real reference.
Right.
And that's the thing that we have to teach people is that frame of reference, and that's what you do specifically, is to not just take, I mean, your boss could tell you all day, go analyze data. Plenty of data to analyze. You could analyze it into the ground 100 different ways. But until they tell you how to analyze it, what the quote unquote expected result is, you know, let's just say,
yeah.
You don't really know where to lead that data or yeah. how to dig into that data. There are 1,000 different ways to dig into it.
True.
How do you want me to look into it?
Exactly.
You know, and that's kind of the point that we're getting to with media and data and information is that there is so, especially with the internet now, because I would venture a guess you're probably in your mid-20s.
I am.
So the internet was just burgeoning as you were a child.
Yeah.
It was just in its infancy. AOL. You may remember some of that stuff.
Yeah.
You may remember some of the conundrum of LimeWire and that kind of shit. And Napster, maybe.
Yeah.
Because that was right there as you were like 4 or 5 years old, as right. you were old enough to start like realizing this datum.
That's
and
true.
Seeing it.
Yep.
And processing it and understanding possibly what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I come from like the Atari age. So for me seeing the internet, like I actively remember being in a class and going, why the hell would I ever need to know HTML? Like, what's this about? Are you shitting me right now? And good God, if I could go back and take that class again, like that's the not seeing the future of the data. And the datum and the information given to me and not using the knowledge at hand to see not just the individual points of datum, but the groups of data that make up the information that was given to me that the information age was coming along the train and we were not going to be using bulletin board systems anymore.
Yeah.
We were going to be using privatized email. We were going to be using the internet to search for things.
We didn't see
stuff
it coming.
Like that. People like me didn't see it coming. I didn't. I quite honestly didn't see a point.
I think I just chose to ignore it.
Yeah.
Like I knew what was going on, but I refused to see it.
Yes.
And now it's just like you just can't ignore it.
It's hard to ignore. It's hard to ignore. And like and it even blew my mind to hear somebody of your age talking about it in the sense that we were talking about it, where the concept of big data, metadata, things like that are the scariest notion possible.
I just feel like, you know, when I look at the world right now, people have such strong opinions.
Yeah.
They feel that they've reached the point of truth where they can have such strong opinions that they can use those as laws.
Yes.
Use those as to take someone's life. That
yeah.
I feel like they feel so confident that they know the truth that nobody else knows, that they get to form them as rules that we live as a society.
Exactly. And that
just amazes me.
Like we were saying on the car ride over here, the difference between theory and law,
exactly.
even when it comes to science. Like, and it took you a minute to pause and think about the fact of, wait a minute, yeah, we haven't actively proved the theory of evolution. Not
yeah.
yet. Otherwise, it would be a law just like gravity.
Exactly.
It would be the law of evolution, and that's what it would be listed as. And you have to accept the fact that theories exist and they abound. And some of them are wild, some of them are out there. But to look at it, to look at science as something empirical that is and is static and does not change, that's dangerous. That's dangerous talk.
That's pretty dangerous. It's uncomfortable that's the world we live in right now.
Yeah, because, I mean, good God. I mean, even think about the laws of gravity as we know it. You know, like, just the laws of that and the fact that we may be able to actively change or alter those laws with science. Like, that's some new stuff that has been theorized before but never actually actualized until China just – like transmitted a particle to a satellite.
Right.
You know, like we just broke the laws of physics. We just made something travel faster than the speed of light to somewhere and to a known destination.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's Star Trek as we know it. So yeah, it's one of those with those points of data, with that information, where do we go with knowledge and wisdom as a society? You know, where do we ethically draw the line? Where do we say, okay, we aren't going to transport people for like a long, long time, you know, because we may end up with a fly situation where, hey, the computer, as far as it knows, is assembling those particles properly, but you may be assembled inside out. As far as the computer knows, here's the lump of particles. Here's the same lump of particles. Here you go. And it was something that literally had to be taught to the computer. And even now, thinking about stuff like quantum computing, AI, whenever you're talking about stuff like Facebook, Facebook just had the situation where they set their AIs loose talking to each other. And they came up with a language. Like, these dudes came in on Monday and they were like, hey, wait a minute. We didn't program this language into them. We don't even understand this language.
Did that actually happen?
Yes.
Because I heard about it, but yes. I thought it was probably a rumor.
No, it happened. So it happened. They had to shut down their chatbot program because they didn't know what their chatbots were saying to each other. They came back and they had actively found a shortcut method to communicate with each other and know what they were saying. And like, that's some pretty active intelligence and programming going on. And you do have to consider that. Yes, it was programmed, but at the same time, these programs found a way to circumvent their programming to operate more efficiently. And once again, found a way to circumvent their programming.
That's almost saying that computers just had their own consciousness.
Well, and that really brings you to the fact of, what is consciousness? I mean, in all reality, if you think about it, is it anything more than shared life experience?
It's having the ability to experience emotions in a deeper way. That's consciousness.
Wow.
So if computers can start feeling emotions, then computers are not just computers. They're almost us. That's the difference between a computer and a human being.
Yeah.
So if they are able to do that, then who's a machine and who's a human?
And just this last year, the Turing test.
The point of singularity.
And that's just it. Like, if you watch it, they're getting ready to release Blade Runner 2049. Or is it 2029? Anyway, the new Blade Runner is coming out.
Okay.
And one of the things that was brought up in the first Blade Runner was the Turing test.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Turing, back in the day, had put forth the concept of, until the day that a person blind on the other side of a wall can be communicating with a computer, and that computer's response is as real as a person's and as real time as a person,
mm-hmm.
and can make that person think that they are communicating with a person.
Right.
We don't have artificial intelligence.
So that's the definition.
That was his put forth.
Okay.
Until a human blind mm-hmm. could be fooled to the fact that they are talking to a computer.
That's artificial intelligence.
A computer just passed a Turing test for the first time ever this last year, where in a separate room, an operator was talking just back and forth, typing something and expecting that was a person typing on the other line. The computer responded to them in the same speed and humanly enough that the person thought that they were talking to another human being. And that was without being programmed to the responses or what the questions were or anything like that. So just as blind, the computer went in just as blind as the person.
So it's obviously like, what is the medium of communication? It's not like obviously face-to-face.
Yeah, it's not face-to-face. It's via keyboard. It's via everything that we would know to be syntax and,
okay.
you know, just like I showed you the article
right.
from Wired magazine talking about algorithms that will be writing the news.
Right.
And that came out in February.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they're talking about algorithm reporters, folks, that will actively be writing news for you to read.
That's already happening then.
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing. Like, and you know as well as I do. As a data analyst, you know as well as I do, the day that they say it's possible, that means it's been happening.
It's possible right now.
Yeah.
And it's happening. Like,
and
every, like, on social media right now, on Facebook, as you go, Amazon, when you shop,
yep.
they're it's already happening. That's the way we do it.
And that's just it. Like, the big data is there to know what it is that you're talking about, to target advertising to you. And like I said, I question even now putting images and videos of my four-month-old baby online, because I'm just giving away his biometric data. I'm just giving it away. I'm not even giving him a chance to choose whether or not to put it out there. By the time he's 20 years old, his choice will already be made by any family pictures that we put online or anything like that. You know? And like, those are some of the far-reaching data decisions that we have to make as a society. Because, like you said, that's some far-reaching implication. That's some sincere data points to get into when you're talking. I mean, we're already talking banks that are looking at installing iris scanners instead of pin pads, stuff like that. Yeah. So when you're talking about that, how hard would it be to take a picture of somebody that's 4K and expand it and get something that would be close to an iris scan, you know? Or be close to any kind of biometric data that could match up to another point to get into a system, as we start to make facial recognition a part of cell phones, as we start to make it part of turning your computer on, entering your house, starting your car, all kinds of stuff like that. So it's some pretty in-depth, hardcore thinking that really does have to go on. As someone involved in the data industry, what are the things that you recognize on a regular basis that you take part in, much like I do? But it's one of those that you're just kind of like, wow, I can't believe I actively take part in this.
I think we refuse to understand the intensity of what's going on. You really have to sit down and, you know, observe that there's a lot of shit going on. And we're being fooled by, I think we are fooling our own self by allowing such things to even exist. And the fact that it does is so amazing that it's hard to comprehend the intensity of it.
Like I told you earlier, a lot of the reason why I don't do what I did previously is the burden of knowledge. Because most people, it's not their job to dig for news 24/7. And once it becomes your job to dig for news 24/7, you really do become aware of that news cycle. You really do become aware of the wash, rinse, repeat that happens in mainstream media and how quick things are released on the internet and just brushed away and buried by like 65, 70 other things, like within minutes.
Yeah.
Within minutes. Like, the same Google search will not render you the same results, you know, and it's pretty easy to happen. So for people to be able to disseminate between the points of data that they are given and all the data that is available, those two things are a far cry different. The data that's available and the data that's given.
That's correct. I'm just thinking of the fact that we even have to worry about this bothers me that all right, so there is plenty of data to be looked at, but the fact that there are people out there that feel confident about the data that they have is enough to reach a point of wisdom is something that I cannot accept. That, you know, we live in a society that they are able to have opinions so strong that they make laws out of it.
Yeah.
And make such strong opinions that, you know, we're ready to kill each other.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. And to hear, quite honestly, to hear that from somebody in their mid-20s is a beautiful, beautiful thing. because it means that people are more awake. They are more aware. And I hope that a lot of people have your point of view. I don't as much faith as I have in my fellow man. I don't honestly see it, unfortunately, because like you said, I think people are more reactionary. People are much more willing to form their opinions on what they've experienced rather than the data given.
Right.
You know, people are much more willing to make that amygdalal choice, that utter guttural stance on something, despite cognitive dissonance, you know, despite that concept that they've been given data that shows their data is wrong, but they're so ingrained in their belief that they are willing to fight that data to their core.
Right.
You know, and willing to not accept the data.
Right.
Because of their belief. And there does come that point, like you said, where do you consider yourself so educated that there is no new data?
Yeah. And going back to what you said at the beginning of the show is that the only wrong question is the question you didn't ask. And I think we said that at the beginning of the show, and we're sort of throughout this show trying to just justify this one thing that,
yeah,
listen, you cannot reach a point where there is no question beyond that point.
That's right.
And there's always a room where there is a room to sit down and discuss and then have an understanding of what is the truth. And even then, it is just an understanding of it.
That's it.
It's not the truth itself.
Yes, exactly. It's still just our understanding of it.
It's just our understanding.
There's still the truth with the capital T that exists out there, that is the universal truth beyond race, color, creed. You know, there is still that absolute knowledge of the universe, that truth that exists. And that's supposed to be all of our goal.
And I think that's why it's beautiful that there is no way to know. That's the beauty of this whole life is to enjoy that purpose of trying to get to the truth. And that makes it fun.
Yeah.
The experience of it.
It does. It does. And now, granted, do you mind if I ask you a very personal question on air? Do you ascribe to a faith?
I do not.
You do not. Were you raised in a faith?
Yeah, I'm from a Hindu family.
Okay.
Yeah, but okay. I don't practice it. I don't even think that I know enough about it to even talk about it on the show.
It's an incredibly, incredibly in-depth and rich faith with thousands of years of tradition. And that's one reason why I just kind of keyed into that just now, by what you were saying, because I was brought up Catholic.
Okay.
Practiced as a seminarian my first year. I was a former assistant youth minister, all kinds of stuff. But like I told you, I would even tell kids, mm-hmm, explore, learn. Don't make this decision because it's the decision your family says to make.
Okay.
This is a decision that you are making for yourself. So you need to explore whether it's something that you want to make.
Okay.
This is a decision of faith. It's, mm-hmm, something that you need to, and nobody can decide this for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the point of knowledge and wisdom.
I've always believed that, why do we even need a religion?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean explore? Like, explore what?
Well, and, you know, like, for me, reading Vedic tradition, mm-hmm, reading the Upanishads.
But what's the point of a tradition?
Well, the point of a tradition is to, of course, ground you to something so that you have something to refer back to. As you go out amongst the world. I firmly understand what you mean as far as religious tradition.
Isn't that the whole point that, we create these rules and we create these norms?
Yes.
That limit us to the point that there's so much that we don't know?
Exactly.
So, like,
and that's the point that we're all supposed to get to.
So if we start following a religion, then we are boxing ourselves to not know about so much else that exists beyond that religion.
You can be, yes. And that is a dangerous line to walk, and that's the hard line.
So my question was, why do we need a religion?
Well, a lot of the reason we need religion is, of course, because people were afraid when the sun went away. I mean, we can just get to the bottom of that right there. Like, that's where a lot of religion started, was the explanation of the world around us.
Wow.
You start looking at the ancient
Seems
Greeks.
Seems like a simple question to
it,
me.
It is.
A complicated concept around it.
It's a hugely complicated concept, and it's a driving concept of humanity, and one of the concepts that divides us the whole world over. So you're absolutely correct in the wisdom fact of, why do we need a religion? I choose to ascribe more to the fact that people need more spirituality than religion. Religion is what you do in a building with a bunch of other people who believe what you believe. Spirituality is how you take that belief and enact it in the world around you. So many more of us need the spirituality. We need to know how we interact with the world around us. We need to know how I interact with you.
Right.
You know, and that's the spirituality. And unfortunately, that religious line that so many people toe prevent them from the world of spirituality.
So are you saying not everybody needs religion?
I would be akin to that, yes. I would be definitely akin to that statement.
But
everybody needs spirituality.
Right, okay.
Everybody needs some depth to their life.
Religion is like schooling, but not everybody needs to go to school. Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, religion is what you do in a building once a week with people of like belief. Spirituality is how you take that
execution
and spread it to the world around you. And that's what I think people are missing, is that spirituality. Because if you're on a spiritual quest, like I said, Upanishads, all that, like, I read that. I read Buddhism. Mm-hmm. I read Zoroastrianism. I read Islam. I want to know all of it, because without that, I cannot make my educated decision. I can't.
Right.
I can't weigh options. I don't have all the data.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't given me a chance to gather all the data to make an educated choice here. To make it, and would you, if your boss came to you today and said, "Hey, I need to know what 100,000 people are thinking off this one data point," could you advise that? In any way, shape, or form?
Well, if I advise that, then it has to go by my name. So I have to say, I think, but I don't know.
As far as I can tell, yes.
As far as I can tell.
However,
based on this data,
there could be 38 other data points that sway things otherwise.
That this is the answer. But it's just based on this data.
Exactly.
So this is not the right answer or the wrong answer, but this is what I think is the answer.
And that's what I think most people don't do with their religion, is put it into that exact. You see what I'm saying? Most people don't say, this is the data I've been given. This is the choice I've made.
Right. Makes sense.
And because of that, they exclude other data.
Mm-hmm.
They exclude other data that should be added to their information system.
Yeah.
If anything, in order to grow their own spirituality and their own depth of their knowledge of their own religion,
mm-hmm.
and why their religion teaches what it teaches. Because guaranteed, your religion split off from another religion because it didn't believe that. Like, unless you're a Zoroastrian, all right, the first religion. Unless you're a Zoroastrian, that's pretty much the way it works. You split off from somebody else somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm.
Catholics split away from Judaism. Like, you know, somewhere along the line, we all offshooted from somebody else.
Right.
Because of a belief. And even you know, Hindu is fairly close to Buddhism in its religion, in its belief. The only difference is, Hindu is a religion, Buddhism is a philosophy.
Right.
Their teachings and principles are very much alike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, especially with the pantheon of gods, things like that, to get in depth into the Hindu religion. Because like I said, it's thousands of years. Like, you're going into Sanskrit, man. You're going into lost languages. Like, quite literally, not just lost languages, but lost concepts of man and humanity. Like, it delves into some deep, hard, hard questions that most people spiritually just simply are not ready for. And that's just a truth. And that's one reason why I've always loved the Hindu faith and the Hindu religion, is because it does accept the fact that despite all this, we may be wrong.
Yeah.
We may be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what we've been taught, and this is what we see. And that wisdom alone, that's where you get into the wisdom traditions of the world, where these faiths, these religions are thousands of years old. And for some reason, even from the time of spoken humanity to written humanity now, these things have not changed. These core beliefs have not changed.
Yeah.
And they are...
I'm glad you know about all of this. And I'm just agreeing to whatever that you're saying, because it's exactly how I feel about all of this that you're just talking about.
Well, and it's a hard reality, and it's one that I had to struggle with for a long time, especially as a seminarian leaving. I had a huge crisis of conscience. And I was just kind of faced with that this last weekend with the funeral of my uncle in Houston, because he was one of the only people that I had told I was leaving the seminary at the time. And he gave me the advice of, nobody can make that decision for you. You went there because you listened to God. You need to listen to God right now. Like, he's the only one that can make this decision for you, is you and him. Like, be damned what anybody else says.
Okay.
This isn't a decision for anybody else.
So he told you to listen to your heart?
Yeah, like, listen to you. It's your God who called you there. Mm-hmm. Listen to the one who called you there, and he will not steer you wrong. And like, it was some of the most sage. The man wore no collar. He was not a priest. He was not a monk like my spiritual director or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a man who hunted and fished and worked at Chevron.
Like any normal guy.
Like any normal dude, but had like one of the most deepest concepts there that I could ever like, oh my God, to this day, it's the biggest advice of my life.
I think it's the voice of your consciousness. It was your own voice that came through him.
Yeah. And
he was an angel.
Yeah, well, and guaranteed somebody had told me that. The way that they had presented it or the status that they held or something prevented me from seeing that wisdom. And right. It took that common everyday man to give me that point of deep introspective wisdom to be like, holy shit. Like, he got it. What didn't I get it? Like, what the hell? Like, I'm the one that was called and I didn't even get it. Like, what is that? You know, so yeah, it is a mind blower.
It's all like you needed a permission. You knew it too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you needed somebody to permit you to do it.
Yeah.
And he was the one who you would ask.
He was the one that, I guess, yeah, I saw as an elder in the family, as
right.
someone, because it is a deep commitment.
Mm-hmm.
It's. I mean, good God, even if you're going to go be a Sikh
mm-hmm.
or something like that in the Hindu faith, like that is a religious commitment that, like, not many families in that culture, when you go back on it, accept.
Right.
That you've gone back on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's the same way in the Catholic faith. It's the same way in any faith. If you say you're going to go study and then you pull away from it, like there's a sense of family shame there. But yeah, I guess it never really dawned on me that, yeah, he was definitely like the elder voice of the family that was like, no, and it's okay.
You cared to
like,
know. What,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, man. You just made mm-hmm. me realize that quite literally he was like the accepting voice of the family that mm-hmm. was like, it's okay.
Okay.
Do what you need to do.
Mm.
And I had never even seen that angle of it. Thank you.
No
Thank
problem.
You. Yeah. Collecting knowledge. There you have it, Cinch it. And, you know, have you ever had that point in life where you...
So it sounds
you
more like a turning point for you.
It was. It was a big point of revelation in my life.
I've never... Honestly, if you were to ask me if I've ever had a turning point, I don't really know. I think... It's not one point in time that I can look at, but it's turned in a very gradual way for me. It's not like one incident that I can look at and point at as to be a turning point. But I think it's, for me, it's more like realization.
Okay.
It's not something that turned. It's something that existed, that I learned about.
Okay.
So I never thought that I moved from... you know, I changed. I don't look at it as a change. But I look at it as a discovery.
Yeah.
So it's not a creation, but it's understanding of what's already created. So it's more like exploration.
Yeah.
So that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
It's everything that you think that you're creating exists. You just have to go out and find and explore and bring it to life.
Yeah.
So that's the way I see it.
Well, and that's definitely the concept of everything we know or will know, we already know.
Exactly.
You know, and it's just how we apply that knowledge.
Yeah.
Do we know how to break the space-time continuum? Well, we just teleported a particle. So by all theory, yeah. Like, we could control how fast that particle gets there, which means technically we're controlling space and time.
That's why I feel like the world of wisdom does not exist.
Yeah.
Because world of wisdom would be where you're sitting and you just know everything.
Yeah.
There is no point of asking any question. But like we just understood that there's never a point where there will not be a question beyond that point.
Yeah.
Right? That would be a wrong answer. So that's what I feel, that we are on the level of knowledge. And if we reach the point of wisdom that we think that we have reached to, we're acting like gods.
Yeah.
That we're not.
And yeah, that's coming from an unreligious person, folks. That's not even coming from my mouth. But yeah, I would definitely agree with that assessment. That's it's a dangerous point to be at as a society.
It's very dangerous.
Where we do have that immediate access to information. And it's interesting that you even bring that concept up, because that's actively where the concept of reincarnation comes from. In the Vedic tradition and everything else is the idea that there is a lesson that we have yet to learn to be part of Shambhala, to be part of Nirvana,
right?
To go be a part of that everlasting consciousness that just is and is truth. And until we get to the point that we are not hung up on that truth, we will keep revisiting.
Right.
We will keep coming back.
Right.
Until we get to the point that we accept that everything that will be is, everything that is will be.
Right.
And it's not necessarily that we can do something about it as a whole.
This itself is a data.
Yes.
And then this will be one data.
He's circling the whole timeline between datum, data, information, knowledge, and wisdom.
And this will
folks.
Keep going. This will keep spiraling
exactly.
to infinity.
Yeah, it's like suds in a bathtub.
But it is just a point in a universe, and universe itself is a point in a universe.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Yeah, it's just like the one drop of suds into it. One drop into a bathtub leads to a bathtub
yes.
full of bubbles.
And there's an arrow that goes through these all, and that's time.
Yeah.
So anytime you look at one is a point in time, but then time goes on. And as time goes on,
yeah,
the reality changes.
Is so your motion.
You may be right in one point in time, but then that may not remain the truth.
That's
it may
right.
change.
That's right. You may not be right the next time
yeah.
because the circumstances around you, the people involved, and the beliefs with the situation
yeah.
may have utterly changed.
Exactly. So things change. They grow.
And that's just it. Like, I think people have gotten to the point, as a society, we've gotten to a point where I think we've got it. If you know what I mean, like, no, we got this. And it's
it seems very simple.
No,
right?
We don't.
It seems very simple. It's like every action has a reaction, as simple as that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's a law.
Yeah, that is a
that's
law.
That's a law. That's so not even a theory.
Exactly. So how is this not a law? Somebody's
exactly.
trying to, like, fool us, right?
Yeah, in theory, yeah. And, in theory, not even in theory, in practicality, what it makes is us very easily fooled.
Exactly.
Because our want is to know and to say that we know to conclusion. Because as human, if we don't know to conclusion, then what good are we? Right?
Yeah. If that's the expectation.
Yeah. That's the societal expectation. Who wants to be the dude in class that doesn't know? Well, I'm kind of okay with being the dude in class that doesn't know if it's something that I need to know. And
yeah,
like, I'm not going to act like I know if I don't know. Like, I'll gladly, like, hey, if one of your relatives wants to come on and correct me about my view of the Vedic religion and and Hinduism, please feel free.
Exactly.
Because I would like to know more. If I'm wrong, please feel free to let me know. Exactly. I'm willing to say I'm wrong, people.
Exactly.
Forever and always willing to say I'm wrong. Just show me.
Yeah.
Just show me.
Exactly.
Show me the data. That's all I'm asking. Don't show me opinion. Don't.
I'm the same way.
Show me the data. Show me the facts, and I will weigh my opinion on facts alone.
They're like,
and remove emotion. Like, the only reason I get excited or excitable on this show is because, unfortunately, the data points I've been given and that I've been able to find lead to horrifying conclusions sometimes. And good God, if people have other data points, please feel free to show them to me. Like, I'm not saying that we live in a horrible world. I think we live in a world of hope, of beauty, of great potential. I think that we are driving ourselves into the ground by what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
Not leaving ourselves open to option, not leaving ourselves open of mind, open of heart, open of spirit to accept other data.
Right. That's why
to look at data empirically and scientifically.
Yeah. That's why I said that I look at the world as a place to explore. Explore is the really important to experience life.
Yeah.
So the whole life's purpose, the way I see it, is exploration.
Yeah.
Is to have the desire to learn. And if you take the desire out, there is no life.
That's it. That's it. Absolutely. And unfortunately, we do have a society that is kind of drained of that. It's kind of drained of purpose. People, because, like, I'm sure you didn't get into data because it was just a job.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you got into data because you're a problem solver.
I was surprised that there is a job for this.
Yeah.
I was more like, okay, this is me. And,
yeah.
Okay, so is there a job for being that I'm interested in?
Yeah, for statisticians.
Exactly.
Or, you know, someone who likes looking at numbers and
yep.
breaking them apart. And,
yeah.
Yeah. They're all over the place, like more than they ever were.
Right.
It's crazy. Like, you are one of the most sought after people in the world right now, my friend. Like, your options are so unending. It's absolutely amazing.
It's amazing. Like, they asked me, so what industry do you work for? I could work for any industry. It could be.
That's right.
There's no limit to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. Had you not explored that option, had you not checked into that option.
Exactly.
Who knows where you would be? Like, you could very easily be one of those people. I got many friends that sell timeshares and stuff that have, like, history degrees
because mm-hmm.
they didn't want to go teach. What else are you going to do with a history degree, yo?
Mm-hmm.
Other than be a historian.
Exactly.
Or a librarian
mm-hmm.
or a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got a really good friend, double majored in chemistry and theater. Amazing at both of them. He's a stock trader. Nothing at all to do with a double major. Pretty hard to get.
I know.
Pretty varying fields there. You did nothing with either one.
How did that happen?
Well, granted, like, he teaches some theater and stuff on the side now,
okay.
things like that with his wife's dance school and stuff. He teaches some acting classes.
Okay.
But yeah, it's one of those, like, how the hell did you end up there, bro? Like, I love him. And even recently, he actually called during the last episode of Dads and Beer.
Okay.
I was talking with his father about him.
Uh-huh.
And he happened to call in the middle of the episode. So it became a three-way episode of father and son talking about being fathers. And I was like, hey, like, we were just talking about education in America and how this stuff is possible and how everybody thinks they got to go get a college degree in order to be a success. Like, I just booked it. You heard me book a show on the way in here. I have no college degree in what I do. I've been doing it for 20-something years. Mm-hmm. That's how I get my jobs. I just have realm of experience.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is one of those, like, if you're willing to go out and get your hands dirty sometimes, you can actually break into some really, really great arenas. Even with, like, web design and stuff like that. Like, dude, you'd be surprised what you can teach yourself off a Google document. Mm-hmm. Or off the internet nowadays as far as stuff like that goes. So the data is there. The information is there. The question is, do you have the knowledge to disseminate that information and the wisdom
to act on it?
To not just act on it, but to weigh that information properly.
Right.
Because I really do believe, much like sympathy and empathy, And I, my last episode of Thinking Deeply was about sympathy and empathy and the difference. And as much sympathy as I had in my heart, I didn't really have a lot of empathy until my mid-30s. And it was because I hadn't been through enough life experience. I hadn't like had enough visited upon me in life yet. I had lost numerous members of my family by that point. You know, I'd made many decisions in life by that point, but still, a lot of my thinking was done out of sympathy and not empathy, not being able to understand the shoes or the situation in which somebody lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was saying earlier, the people in Houston right now who are actively being evicted from their apartments. And it's not because they didn't pay their rent. It's because it's a health hazard for them to go back to their apartment. And they legally can't until the apartment complex fixes it. And they're in this legal snafu of like, I had to evacuate and leave all my stuff, but you're telling me all my stuff's going to be out on the curb if I don't come get it by Thursday. And my car is still under 2 feet of water in the driveway. You know, like, that's something until you've gone through it or until you have family that's gone through it. Like, you can sympathize with that person, but you can't really feel it. Like, you can't really empathize with that. You know, like, right now, hell, you're a refugee. You don't even know when you're going to be able to go home.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about it a while ago over a beer. It may be this weekend when your ticket is made for.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It may be next week. You may be in Austin for, like, the next 2-3 weeks for all you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and, you know, especially since you came and left out of Houston. Everything else, you know, like if I think flights are coming in and out of Houston now, but
yeah,
you know, like, yeah,
I flew from Atlanta, so
yeah, I mean, to be able to empathize with that, to be able to that's when you truly get into feeling,
yeah, that's the truth. Something that, you know, I don't know about, and it does bother me.
You'll get there. And that's literally, like I said, it's something that don't feel bad for that. Still feel that. But yeah, and you know, it is the point of life that some people have been less stricken by tragedy than others.
Right.
So they may not be able to have that kind of empathy towards someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, good God, my wife, until just before we got married, when she lost her dad,
mm-hmm.
she was in her mid-20s and had never lost anybody close to her.
Yeah.
Like, I dealt with that fully by the 5 or 6 times by the time I was in 7th grade. You know, like, that was an issue I took care of way early in life. I can't imagine what it would be to be in my mid-20s and finally lose somebody close to me. Like, ooh, that, like, thank God I got that pain and hurt and question over with so early in my life. But at the same time, she was able to deal with it and process it a lot easier because she was older. So, like, whereas I dwelt on it a lot more in my junior high years, she was able to process it and get over it faster because she was older, you know, and able to separate that logic from emotion, that roller coaster, you know. So it's one of those, like, it comes quicker for some people, later for others, but it always comes, man. It's always there. It will happen. I assure you. Empathy will occur. And the plus side is, as opposed to a lot of people, you're already open to it. You're already open to the experience. A lot of people, I don't think, are spiritually open to the experience of empathy. Because they live by those hard black and white rules, those hard religious rules like we were talking about, that don't allow for the empathy. They allow for sympathy. They perfectly allow for you to feel bad for somebody and just leave it alone. But for you to get your own heart entangled in it, for you to actually feel them, is something that we try to actually like get away from in our society, you know? It's something that, like, we try not to do that when, oddly enough, we're the only society in the world where that's, like, encouraged, where we're supposed to be doing that. You know, like, we're supposed to be open to that situation. We're supposed to be open to understanding what the life of an immigrant is, what the life of a refugee is, what the life of the oppressed is. We have that freedom to explore that, and we don't.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's our deficit as a people and as a country, is that we actively don't explore that when we have the opportunity to. Mm-hmm. And those are the moments that allow us to grow as people, as a nation, as individuals.
Yeah.
All at the same time. And I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
It was my pleasure.
Actively sharing, because, like I said, not everybody would be open to the fact of meeting a strange dude at a bar and him saying, hey, you should totally come be on my show today. But you were. You were. And you were willing to come in, share ideas, share some deep concepts, talk about it, talk about our impact on the world around us. And not just that, but how we impact each other. And I think that's what it's about. That's what Dudes and Beer is about. That's what Thinking Deeply is about. I think that's what America itself is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
Is our exploration of each other.
That's how the world should be about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Sanchit, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Of course.
Great, great conversation.
Amazing.
And thank you so much for delving deep into such a hard topic, because it's not an easy one, folks. It really isn't. And remember, as you're out there taking care of yourselves, make sure to take care of each other. Make sure to listen to each other. Open your hearts to opportunity. Open your minds to opportunity. It's only through that we grow as people, that we grow as a society, that we grow as human beings and as a planet. So once again, Sanchit, thank you so much for coming on today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this installment of Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. Tune in next time for more deep introspection, contemplative thought, and general musings on humanity and life, right here on Thinking Deeply with Dudes and Beer. Like what you heard? Feel free to tune into the other content by Dudes and Beer on dudesandbeer.com. Our content is also available on the Spreaker Market, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, and your favorite podcast app. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the Revolution Digital Group family of podcasts. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.